Welcome to episode 44. Has it overtaken anyone's age yet?
No.
Kids at the back.
Yes, it's overtaken my age for another 2 weeks. We have now surpassed it. Yeah.
I can remember being 44.
That must have been years ago.
44. I've had a good time, apparently. Yeah, nice. An album of the month podcast from me, Guy, with David.
Hello there.
Nolan.
Very jovial tonight, David.
He's on the wine.
I'm on the Beaujolais, people.
Oh, Beaujolais season, is it? Shout out to all the middle class Beaujolais fans.
The Beaujolais Nouveau est arrivé.
and Joey.
Good evening.
Yeah, evening. Episode 43 was the beauty of Helado Negro's Fazor. And from there, we leap to Yardak's second album, Where's My Utopia? That's my pick, coming in a minute. In the second half of Spin It Or Bin It, we nod to our album of the month and select our picks of spoken word tracks. If you're new to the pod, welcome to our little universe. Find all our previous eps at thisisnothappening.buzzsprout.com or search for This Is Not Happening wherever you get your pods. And check out the blog at thisisnothappening.net for all previous episodes, playlists, new music, albums of the month, and all that rest of that jazz. We try and celebrate all the lovely corners of the music that we love. Anyway, enough of the intros. It's my spot with the Yard Act. Still, it's Ace, Tom, Lynn, Boss, that's Boss, Boss, Sweet. So I sort of looked back at records I brought to the podcast in these 40 plus episodes. And there seems to be a mixture of sort of wild stabs and lucky guesses, Genesis Owusu, Lone Lady, less said about that, or Creepshow, perhaps the better. Safer picks like Bicep, and then albums from artists that I truly love as sort of top 10 acts for me, Hot Chip and Metronomy, but whose albums weren't perhaps their greatest work. And that category's probably been the pressure of selling the record to three less adoring listeners. So when Yardak's second album came out, I could see it was landing on the 1st of March. I sort of demanded it to be my next pick, but I also knew I might be setting myself up as a bit of a fall guy because I adored their debut, The Overload, and all the singles from Where's My Utopia are into my favourite lists immediately. But if you don't pick the music you love, what is the point of doing this podcast? So I'm here for this. Right, Yardak, who are they? Formed in late 2019 from the ashes of a couple of not-quite-made-it Leeds bands, lead singer and lyricist James Smith and bassist Ryan Needham moved in together and started making music while the world fell apart around them. Recruiting drummer Jay Russell and guitarist Sam Shipstone, the band released their debut, The Overload, in January 22, following initial singles made into a much-heralded EP, Dark Days, which came out in April 21, and included early favourites Fixer Upper and Dark Days. The album was cast into a post-punk pigeonhole, and while I sort of see some of that energy, to me it was always much more than that. It trod the fine line between shouty acerbic tracks full of biting wit, irony, C-bombs and bleak humour, and then three-minute pop songs that were also full of great hooks that modern-day lads could pogo down at the front, up down to at the front of the gig. Yes, seeing them live at Glastonbury was certainly a specific demographic, but that really seems to have widened by the time I saw them in Manchester at the Apollo a month ago, and the band's grown along with their fans. At the time of The Overload, they gained some rather lazy labels, the worst of which I read was Coachella Friendly The Fall. Cheers, Pitchfork. But I hadn't heard anything like them in years. They also took huge hype from that first EP and seized that chance with both hands, which I think is really gratifying to see. So much expectation laid out, but it's rare for a band to make music that hits the spot like that. I want to half sing to it, but also want to crack up at the lyrics. I mean, just read Dead Horse's first verse from the sort of nexus of post-Brexit bleakness and laugh-out-loud wordplay. They were always much more than a band strung together with jangly guitars and bass, though. I think, for me, the sound of the band is as much about Shipstone's distinctive risks as Needham's bass lines and, of course, Smith's vocal delivery. There was always a lot of care going into what they did and what they said and what they looked like. The videos to that first album were really clever, black-and-white affairs that cast a whole narrative arc through all of them, and none more so than the closer, 100% Endurance, which, along with Tall Poppies, pointed to maybe a bit more subtlety and introspection beyond that kind of post-punk template. So what next? They toured relentlessly, almost burnt out, riding the wave of unexpected success and the fear of it all ending if they let it go. And who'd blame them, to be honest? Writing songs on the road and releasing singles through 2022 and into 23... The pressure to make a worthy follow-up must have been massive, not to mention fulfilling expectations of people who both wanted The Overload Mark II or something completely different. The classic follow-up album dilemma. The first single that came out from that was The Trenchcoat Museum, an 8-minute track, which was much more like LCD Sound System and Talking Heads
than their previous work. I was fully on board from that. A brilliant video, swagger, and sort of unafraid to release something that long and that ravey, really. It was much more dancey than I'd expected. Singles came thick and fast after that. Dream Job, a sort of Mancunian club Tropicana that posted fun at the false positivism of the music industry. We Make Hits, Walsh and Needham's origin tale of the band, their proviso to make hit records, however much bands like them weren't supposed to be that honest. And then When the Laughter Stops, which had the brilliant guest vocals of Katie J. Pearson and a brilliant video. They really can make hits for me. So when the album landed, I absolutely rinsed it to the point where I actually had to take a week off it before the podcast because I've listened way too much. What did I expect and what did I get? Well, before Trenchcoat, I had genuinely no idea. I sort of wanted them to develop a bit. I didn't expect or really want the Overload 2. It felt like they had a much more in them than that. What I got was something much bigger, more layered, that really built on that Overload template and took things way forward for me, lyrically and musically. And over time, a record I've developed a really beautiful relationship, which finds me even closer to the band I was before, with new layers, new meaning in lyrics, and much more interesting sound and direction. One that already makes me wonder where they'll go next. But what does everyone else think? As ever, we start with our first question, because I think we'll have the full menu of responses here. What did we expect and what did we get? And I'm going to go with David.
Yes. I really like Yard Act, and I have been following their career for a while, partly as a Leeds band, as a Leeds resident. It's really interesting. I think it's interesting. You know, I think for a city like Manchester, it's got this like massive music scene that's really obvious in terms of the influences that you can see what people are playing on. But I actually think Leeds has a history which this band is tapping into. So I'm thinking like Gang of Four and the Mekons, The Wedding Present, very clever acerbic lyrics.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Gang of Four, I think is the best band ever from Leeds. I think they're absolutely phenomenal. I think Entertainment is one of the best punk stroke post-punk album ever made. You know, interestingly, that band have got a rhythm section, like a bass and drums that absolutely kick ass. I mean, Flea of Hot Chili Peppers, I said, he based his entire sound on the Gang of Four. You know, like, it's interesting.
Shame the rest of the band didn't.
Well, indeed. What did I expect and what did I get? I really like the first album. I think what I'm discovering with this band is, like, the songs I like so much. I think Rich from the first album, I played so much. I thought the video was genius and the song is so clever. It's just so witty, and I think it's really hard to pull that stuff off. But then they do have that 4S thing sometimes where they'll build a riff and then they'll just absolutely smash all the way through it to deliver that with the song. I, like you, I thought Trenchcoat was a really interesting move forward. I mean, it's obviously influenced by LCD Sound System, which is obviously the bedrock of this entire, originally our blog and indeed the podcast. And it's the one thing, the one part of the Venn diagram we know we can overlap on. But I suppose because it's sort of somewhere between LCD Sound System and that kind of post-punk stuff, it probably just gets classed, I don't know, indie. And this is more like indie dance, I suppose. But like... So I think I really like this record. I think the highlights are really fantastic. And it's probably similar to me in the first album in that I don't think the album sounds the same. I think it is, they've made a huge step forward and they're clearly growing as a band, they're growing as a fan base, growing as a live act. Does this deliver completely for me as an album where I think every track is absolutely A grade? No.
But yeah, I don't think it does for me either.
Right, yeah. So I think... But I sort of felt that to some degree about the first album. I think, I really enjoy listening to it all the way through. I've done it repeatedly many times and I've not a problem with it. I think what I've begun to find is the songs I really like, I just almost want to play sometimes on their own. And then there were other songs which I'm happy to not hear as much. I think they're a really clever band. I think it's a really smart lyricist. I think this is a big step forward. I think generally it's a really good album. I mean, the reviews are like, off the scale amazing.
Yeah.
And I would wonder if it's not quite hitting that levels. You know, it's interesting.
I mean, the hype machine is always happy.
Yeah. And it's,
I mean, like a month, a 2 week, 3 weeks out, something had something ridiculous like 89 on Metacritic.
It's just
ridiculously not possible.
And so. I think there was actually another Leeds band. Down. There's another Leeds band called English Teacher who just released their debut. This could be Texas on Friday. Yeah. I think they are really interesting. And I think they are, I think that they might even be pushing that envelope forward a bit more than this. But, you know, anyway, it's good that they're both there and they're doing that in this scene. So, yeah, I really like it.
Nice. Thanks. And maybe I'll go to you next, Nolan. What was your impact from the album? What did you expect and what did you end up with?
My expectations are a bit of a mixed bag because I was late to the party, as we've discussed in the past. You know, it was 100% Endurance that kind of got me into them in their last album. And I think because I was late to the party, I perhaps didn't pay as much attention as let's say, you know, Guy or David did to the last album. You know, being fully brutally honest, they're from the neighborhood I live in Leeds. So, you know, they are the band that all the dads trying to be cool drop into conversations when we're waiting to pick up our kids. And there was a lot of hype around this album. And I think that the one thing that I got from this album is that, number one, I think the production's really good. Like, it's such a big step, you know, bearing in mind that they recorded essentially the last album in lockdown.
Yeah, remotely. They never played any of the songs in the same room until they toured, which is just nuts.
Yeah, crazy.
I did not know that. That's crazy.
So it's super tight. And like the extra production around it, almost like, I think it kind of touches, you know, it's not skits, it's kind of like clips and stuff, but it touches a bit on hip hop.
Sure.
I think the thing that I really struggle with them is that because maybe I'm a huge hip hop fan, I've never fully got into the whole spoken word thing. And if for as many points, there are brilliant, brilliant moments on this album, there's moments that I really struggle with. And the thing that's really annoying me is that I annoy myself when I listen to this album, because the stuff that I struggle with, I really respect that they've done on an album. Just don't enjoy listening to it.
I mean, there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide when you're not singing. There is nowhere else to go.
And there's there's so many things that like I think that's brilliant about this. Like some of my dad's friends in Canada are absolutely obsessed with them, and you can get why they're obsessed with it, and you can get why they're obsessed with the band, and I get that comment about them and Coachella, and I get why they're getting all the good reviews, and I'm not saying that it's not deserved. What I am saying is that I think that, and I put this on the blog, is that it's an album that I'd really struggle to recommend to people. And I think why I am struggling to recommend it to people, I still can't get my head around. It's got so many peaks, but it's got a lot of trust for me as well.
Interesting.
They do that thing of they've created an entire musical universe. Like they sound, you come on the radio and you go, I literally know who this is because nobody else sounds like this. And I
fucking love that so much. Like this is why I can't get my head around it. Like I am jumping from one side to another. There are some tracks on here that are just like poptastic indie music, right? Yeah. And then I love that the whole album isn't that. It's kind of like, hey, we'll give you a couple of these and we've ticked the box. And, you know, very much like in the song title, like we make hits. But then they go on on these tangents. And that's cool.
Then you get
cool.
Blackpool Illuminations, which is a very softly spoken 6-minute track about messing around at Blackpool as a kid.
And this is the thing that I find a challenge is that the first time you hear that, you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of neat. And the second time you hear it, you're like, oh, I've heard this. It's like fucking when your mate's telling you a really boring story. But then
you're
when it's on
it's
an album.
Audiobook.
Yeah.
Well, the point about an audiobook is you only listen to it once, right?
Well,
This feels like the right time to bring Joey in. Joey, how did you feel? Because I know from the blog, it was an interesting experience.
I'm so mixed up about this. I'm so mixed up about this album. In so many ways, like it's caused me genuine like trauma. This album has, which isn't a great start to a artistic.
Yeah,
critique.
When you say it left its mark on you, that's not not the right way.
I think John wants a bit of something to say about the use of the word trauma there. But anyway, I'm going to move on.
So I'll expand on that if you want to, because I've chosen my words very carefully there, actually. You've asked me a question, which is what did you expect and what did you get? So let's answer that one. And I'm going to try not to just dive into a machine gun of thoughts.
But
about
like,
it.
Tell us, don't worry about upsetting anyone. Like, I'm genuinely interested.
So when I don't like an album, and we do a podcast, I always pretend that one of the artists is on the podcast, and just to make sure that I'm not a dick, because it's really easy to be a dick.
Hi, James.
Yeah, it's super easy to be a dick, and I'm going to try really hard not to be a dick. So what did I expect? What did I get? I completely miss Yard Act. Like, it wasn't the first time I'd heard of them when you chose them as your number one album of 2022. Was it 22?
Yeah, it was 22.
So I had heard of them, but I'd barely heard of them. And then 100% Endurance, I loved it. Like, I really loved it. Did I go back and listen to the album? If totally honestly, no, I didn't. I respected the fact that you absolutely loved it, and I assumed it was good because you loved it, Guy. And then Trenchcoat Museum came out, and I was like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. That was like nearly in my top 10 tracks of last year. It was amazing. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, this is for me. This is written just for me. It was right on the cusp of falling into something that gets on my tits, which I'll explain in a second, but it didn't go into that bit. So it was like you've really pushed the envelope into that space, but I really, really like it. So my expectations were super, super, super high for this. I was really chuffed.
Always dangerous.
I was going to listen to an album of a band that I'd not listened to before, yada, yada, yada. The first listen, I was like, oh my God, oh, this is like super interesting. This is really interesting. And my first listen was actually in the gym. I'm 47, so I still write stuff down in a notebook in the gym. Like, I don't use an app or anything like that. So, like, and I wrote a bunch of stuff in my training notebook
on a quill, with a quill.
Yeah, on a quill,
on parchment.
It's well, papyrus actually. And I was like, oh my God, this is really, really super interesting stuff here. And I was writing stuff down, and I was like, oh my God, and I was like really excited, genuinely really excited. And then I listened to it again, and I was like, oh, fuck, that was... I only wanted to listen to that once. When we reviewed Kendrick Lamar...
Hang on, is this like the Wu-Tang album, where like only one person's going to get it?
So what's the Kendrick Lamar album? Jeez, I've totally forgotten.
Mr. Morale and the Hot Steppers.
Thank you, Mr. Morales, yeah.
I'm with you on that. It's an amazing album.
Mr. Morale, not Mr. Morales.
I've never listened to it since we did the pod.
So Mr. Morale, I liken to Nil by Mouth. Like, it's an amazing film. It's one of the best films ever made. Do you want to watch it every day? No, you don't.
I like now, this actually, analogy. This is good.
Actually, good. That album, the Kendrick Lamar album, I do actually listen to quite a bit, but you have to be really in the right frame of mind to listen to it, particularly if you're going start to finish. But with this album, what I got was an album that was amazing, like... But I didn't want to. I genuinely didn't want to listen to it again. And the second time I listened to it, I had quite an emotional response to it. And I mean, like, it made me quite angry. And I've tried to work out why it made me quite angry. And I haven't quite worked that out yet. There's still some things that I think are brilliant about it. There's still some things that I think are like a super, super interesting, but I don't want to listen to it as an album. And the more I listen to it, I was trying to answer the question, why do I dislike this as much as... Now, in fact, you know what? That's not the right words. I'm going to try and be really careful with my words here. Why do I dislike listening to it as much as I do? And that's different to disliking it, I think, because I just wasn't enjoying the experience of listening to it, and it was doing something.
Was it making you uncomfortable?
To a degree. So, I have an ex partner who I've got no ill will to or anything like that. This isn't but like she was like massively into like the Mancunian art scene and like Mancunian poetry and stuff like that, and I know he's from Warrington, and I know they're from Leeds. So
I'm sorry. I keep on, like, you can see me laughing on camera. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I was going to text you and say this album reminds me of her.
No. So now she was one of the best poets I've ever read the work of.
Yeah.
She was a social worker. She wrote poetry about her social work as a means of just working through the horrors that she worked with on a day-to-day basis. Barely anybody in the world has ever heard one of her poems because they're for her, basically. But we also used to go and watch other like spoken word stuff and like blah, blah, blah. And then like even after we split up, like I lived in Manchester for years and was kind of involved with all of that stuff. And I don't know if it was like there was a load of like memories from that or whether there was a thought like I'd heard like quite a lot of this sentiment or the delivery or something. But I've had to stop myself listening to it because all I could do was trying to work out why I dislike listening to it.
But if that's your reaction, then why would you keep going back?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
That is
fascinating,
most,
though.
That is really...
I'm sorry, one of the most interesting bombshells I've ever heard.
No, but mate, like, well, I'm with you 100% because I actually wanted to text you a couple weeks ago and go, this album reminds me of Person X.
And do you know what?
And I don't know why, but I thought if I send this to you...
I'm going to contact her, actually, to see if
she's heard this album.
I'd love to know what she... But there's also all these callbacks to me. You know, this whole, like, people's poet kind of cliche tag that people... that have been associated with people... Mike Skinner, Arctic Monkeys, Jamie T.
I think there was something about, I mean, the people's poet thing is patronizing because it means you're not posh and you've got good words. And I get that about that. I particularly like the Mike Skinners in this world and all that. Yeah. But there is also a sense of somebody is a bit self-appointed. They are kind of going, I know I'm good with wordplay. I know I can, you know, that kind of thing. And all it means is I'm from an ordinary background and I'm good with words, right? That's all it means, really.
Yeah, but there's also something like similar, because I've bizarrely, for an album that I, and again, I'll use the words carefully, do not enjoy listening to. I'm not saying it's not good because I actually think it is, but I don't enjoy listening to it. And I've tried to work back like, because I do like Mike Skinner. I do like, especially the early Arctic Monkey stuff, which is definitely in that people's poet stuff.
Yeah,
definitely Jamie T's early work. Yeah. Like, it's all like that nostalgia thing. A lot of it's like...
Yeah, for sure.
Like a nostalgic view back on something. And I just, like, it, on paper, I should love this.
The thing I really find challenging is that I think, as a lyricist and as a poet, he is extremely talented. Like, extremely talented.
Yeah, I agree.
And I actually really fucking love everything about him, his delivery, everything he's about. And you know what? Maybe if it was an entire album of just one thing, you could get your head around it. But because they dip in, and this is one of the things that's like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing, right? That I find brilliant and frustrating, but I get frustrated at myself, is that because they can pivot from a super radio-friendly song to something that is completely the opposite of talking about going to Blackpool in 1988 or whatever, and then trying to understand why I don't like it, why I don't find a place. That's why I find it frustrating, but I find myself frustrated at being frustrated with it, because the extreme talent of this band, and especially him, I'd probably argue, is fantastic. And it's like, fuck, I am so happy that there is a band that is in my hometown that is fucking making music like this. That is like literally, you know, for the first time, I'd argue in 20 years in indie music, and no disrespect to some of the other Leeds bands, but are planting a flag and like making something so unique, but also making something that is literally getting them global recognition on their terms is great. And the one thing that we haven't mentioned, though, that I really love about this band, and it's come across more on this album than their last album, is that they've got a really good northern ironic sense of humor. They poke fun at themselves a lot in this album.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I mean, just watch their music videos, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they're really
good. God damn, they're such good videos.
So let's maybe pivot, because I had a couple of questions lined up here, and one of them I think was around humor. So it's a very, like, humor is so central to the album. It's very English, I think. and it is there to balance the bleakness. James has definitely talked about wanting to kind of undercut some of the darker parts of the album. And also when he is sort of almost getting into like, because a lot of this album is about the band trying to come to terms with the success. You know, We Make Hits is about them unashamedly saying, yeah, we actually, for all of the love of wanting to be a musician, it is about making hits. He also talks, one of the big themes is also about he's wanted all his life, the band have wanted all their life to be successful because they've sort of been a succession of pretty failing bands. And then when you get there, you realize it doesn't solve a lot of your problems. But humor, I think, has been a way of riding through some of that, because I think there's quite a lot of bleak subject matter in here. But I mean, do you, it sounds like you're sort of in agreement in a bit there, Nolan. I mean, do you think it works? Because I do, but I think there's a very fine line between making a point and almost feeling you have to undercut it with humor. And also, I think humor is seen as a bit of a dirty thing on it. Like, to me, it's like, oh, you can't be doing serious music if you're being humorous. I completely disagree, but I think it's a really fine line to tread. And I applaud the way they've used it, because it isn't going to work for everyone.
But I think there's a lot to be said about the Northern sense of humor.
Yeah, you know, totally.
I think that this, he's not originally from Leeds. He's from the other side of the Pennines, but you know, there is a cross the board Northern sense of humor, right? You meet someone from the North and they're always funny, but they've also got to, you know, they can dip in and out of it. You sit in a pub long enough in the North and you get the Northern sense of humor. Yeah. If you follow me,
I think, the Northern thing's really interesting, because you know that when the Southerners do that thing about, oh, you've got a chip on your shoulder. No, obviously people do, because you know there's no fucking investment. There's loads, you know, all that crap. But actually, yeah. I think sometimes
but
people
leveling
misread.
Up, David.
No. But people, hang on. People misread. I think. So I want to give an example. I was talking to a Southern telly person about One Day, the David Nicholls adaptation, and I thought, which I absolutely loved, and I thought Ambika Mod was absolutely incredible as Emma, and really, really inhabited it. And in the original novel and in the adaptation, she's snippy, sarcastic Leeds girl, and I thought she absolutely nailed that. And I was talking to somebody who didn't like it, and they said she wasn't funny; she was just really annoying and like snippy. And I was like, no, that was really funny.
No.
I was like, no, that's really funny. But it got into me into thinking about Northernness and, you know, Southernness and that thing. And I think, you know, everyone talks about, you know, when like sort of music journalists do that thing, they sort of, they're little cliches about stuff. I think there's a funny little balance about, I heard on the radio this morning, or no, maybe yesterday morning, I heard Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now, which I hadn't heard actually on the radio for a long time. And it actually made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Because I'd forgotten. I was looking for a job and I found a job. It's just so funny. But it's also quite bleak. It's saying jobs are shit. If you get a job, it's shit. If you haven't got a job, it's shit. That's the joke, right? Interestingly, though, because I was trying to work out where in the album I was struggling. I think you're absolutely right, Nolan, about Blackpool and Illuminations. The other one for me is Down by the Stream, which is the third song about bullying.
Yeah.
And those, for me,
those are the only
not,
two songs I like.
They're not funny. They are really. Well, they just kind of stream of consciousness stories about his childhood or, you know, earlier stuff. And I think I agree. I struggle with those as repeated listens. I do think that putting Down by the Stream as track three was a mistake sequencing wise, because I'm well up for the first two tracks, and then I was like, oh. And
seriously, you think An Illusion is a, like, I think that it is. I don't think it's a bad song. I think it's a
I think it's
song
really good. Actually, no,
so
I've
I think
around,
one and two
around, I really like it.
Are the basic calling card for the album. One basically goes, well, one, I think they wanted, to me, it's almost like they wanted to toy with everyone expecting to start off with one of the bangers. But it is about the entire album and their entire existence now. I'm in love with An Illusion. He's basically going, you know, talks about, you know, you're drunk. Like, it's a big, you can see there's a big guilt all the way through the album about leaving his wife and his son. He finally became famous at the very point he'd started a family. So it's a lot about that. And other tracks talk about that. But I think it's talking directly about the fact that he is in love with being a musician, which is a complete illusion, because you never know whether you're going to be famous or not. And then they go into We Make Hits, which essentially goes, we unashamed, it's not cool for bands like us. We're sort of a working class band from the North. But if you like, it's not cool for us to say we want to make hits. but we want to make hits. And I think that is the manifesto for them as a band. And I think those two tracks are hugely important being in that order at the start of the album.
I really agree. When I started, I went and read the lyrics for An Illusion, and then suddenly I was like, oh, okay. You know,
you need go into genius, basically.
I'm in love with An Illusion. So once the wheels are in motion, I'll swear I'll join Revolution. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm on the treadmill. I've just got to go and deal with this right now. And yeah. I do think that opening, what is the opening? Literally the opening lyrics. It's a bank holiday, so all the hospitals are shut. Guess I'll have to saw off my own foot, which is actually really funny.
My wife really liked that in the car today. And then really we got through funny. Make Hits, and by halfway really through Down by the Stream, she's like,
really great.
I'm not sure about this record.
But I think when he balances that humour and the bleakness thing, and nails it.
It's great.
It's just not all the way through.
But this is the thing, and as I said before, you fully understand. So we are kind of knee deep in it, right? Two of us live in the city. I mean, David, you live a 10-minute drive away from where these guys are at. I live in the same neighborhood. Yeah, I mean, totally. we are knee deep in it, and you guys are on the other side of the Pennines, but arguably where the lead singer's from, right? So we are all arguing and talking about it being a northern thing,
and
it's all on our doorstep. So it's good and it's bad because we maybe overanalyze it. If you're sitting there and you're some hipster in Brooklyn right now, you'll be like,
I'd love to know his
irony and his vocal inflection. Like, fucking, they'll be loving this.
Scotland?
Oh my God, I love his accent. It doesn't sound like the Queen, but it's a bit. I also like how I'm just imitating someone from North America.
Shout out to our Brooklyn listeners.
How are you doing?
I think guys like hit on one of my big problems here. Like, I don't find this funny. I don't get the wit thing.
Maybe that's because you're from the Midlands.
Like, I really don't, I don't get it. And then I looked at my list of things that this makes me want to listen to. And I'm like, okay, hang on a second. They're all from not where I'm from. So is there, to Nolan's point there about people in Brooklyn listening to this and thinking, my God, it's so exotic. Is it like my proximity to, like, so I lived in Leeds for 13, 14 years. I lived in Manchester for 10.
Yeah.
I'm overly familiar with the two places that are most important to his life. Yeah, yeah. So maybe there's just a proximity thing where I'm like this is just the thing.
I remember you saying that it was like, there was like, I think in Down by the Stream, they talk about a party in Partington. You were just like, this is too much Manchester in this album.
Yeah.
I get that.
You've been in a bar in both those cities.
It's like,
you've been in pubs and bars in Leeds and Manchester with this person essentially already.
This is what I was about to say, is that I think that this is part of the challenge, right?
No, it totally is that
I know a couple people that remind me of their lead singer, at least on this album. That
I'm not saying
he's generic, and I think that's one of the challenge. But you do know people like, so he also is a bit of a chameleon, right? Throughout the songs, he comes across in different ways. There's a couple of the songs how he comes across, especially on this album. I'm like, I've known a couple of people like you in my time living in England, and I fucking didn't like them.
Whoa.
I'm just saying it, right? Like,
maybe if you live in Somerset or Inverness, it doesn't feel like that.
But that's what I'm saying. Agreed. Like, we are literally knee deep in it because, and this is the problem, because they are so distinct and he is so distinct in his delivery. We're literally judging him by some guy that we met in the pub 2 years ago that did my tits in.
And I think that's why it's hard. You're absolutely right. Sorry, just Joey, just for a second, but I think you're absolutely right. I think its style and its accent and its humour and its references are so very much of a thing and a place that I adore the fact that you've made a song about Blackpool Illuminations. I have a very different feeling about that, and I'll touch on that briefly before we wrap up, I'm sure. But if it works, it is incredible. But if it doesn't, my God, it's going to be like putting your teeth down a razor blade.
So, 100%. So I wrote down a thing about, like, some of my experiences of listening to this were like cheese grater, like, and not the carrot side.
Fingers or testicles?
No, just kind of
what the long slices.
This yeah, is yeah, a yeah. family long- podcast.
Women of the class. So I was mandolining my...
but I think I'm working through, and this is quite nice therapy for the traumatic experience which has caused me. I think we're working through exactly why that is. But I keep on going back to the Arctic Monkeys. Like, I remember, and I'll try and dig it out. So it's a fascinating article by an American teenager about listening to the Arctic Monkeys and Googling Frank Spencer. And learning about
and Rotherham.
Like 70s and 80s, like TV culture in Britain because of the... And I just, like, there's something there. Like, I get that. I understand why other people would really... Like, Jamie T, I keep coming back. Panic Prevention by Jamie T, I just think is an absolute masterpiece. I know I'm on my own on that one, on this podcast.
No, I think it's a decent album.
Oh, I think that's... I just think it's lovely. But if I was from London... I might not think that. Like, I
understand that.
The whole point. We can all only respond as we 100%. I mean, and maybe this is an interesting thing. You know, other than Guy, the three of us all met in Leeds. Two of us still live there. One of
sure,
you know,
but I have spent all, a huge you know, amount one of time us, in these
one
cities.
Of us, one of us abandoned Leeds. Just I know, saying. Man. No, just saying.
The hell.
There's all our like historical and narrative strands over crossing here, and yet we've all got quite different reactions to different bits of it. So I want to talk about best tracks, but just briefly, we talked about how it's a sonic leap forward. There's some really nice symmetry here. So I've listened to a bunch of podcasts. We'll put them in the show notes. There's a lovely one he did where he talked about, James Smith talked about being a massive Gorillaz fan when he was a teenager. So working with Remy Kabaka Jr., who's obviously a big part of that band and production, must be mad, but also like a really beautiful bit of serendipity, like this sort of closing of a sort of musical loop. To touch it briefly, I think like you look at the Overload now, and obviously there's context to why that album was so sort of stripped back, but all the layers and layers of this music, there's strings, there's so much more synths, there's backing vocals. Those two vocalists, female vocalists, play live, they tour with them as well. Was it two and a half minutes into Dream Job, my favorite bit of tune percussion of the year, a little 80s drum roll, and there's so many layers. What I enjoy about this is it's really opening itself up as I listen to it again and again and again. It's a shame that you struggle with it so much, Joey, because I think musically, I think you'd love so much about what is on offer if you could maybe just get an instrumental version of the album.
No, I want to pick up on that, Guy. This is a really accomplished piece of work. Like, it's a really accomplished album. It feels, I think, Nolan, you mentioned the production, like it is beautifully produced. It sounds fantastic. The female vocals are such an addition to the record.
Yes,
The
female vocals are the thing that take them to the next level.
Yeah, and, totally.
What I will say as well is that, you know, we talked about the lockdown recording this album, how tight they are with all of their vocals. I mean, the female vocals really stand out, but all of their vocals and the nuances that they have and the flow that they have on some of the tracks are really, really enjoyable. And what that says to me is that this is a band that, you know, is playing together and playing as one, which is really nice.
It like, totally comes
you
across,
know, you, for all the things that I've struggled with, that's one of the things that has been a real highlight on this album for me.
I would also say, like, it is, I really come around to the opening track. I think they are telling a story. I think the closing track, A Vineyard for the North, which I think is a new single.
Under the hill, heads you lower than hell, 'cause you're keeping it real. Is it treating you well? Don't wanna be tough, my maker, so I'm quitting
the band. I've listened to this album loads. It was on the radio the other day.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes when it's on the radio, you hear it with new ears, like that weird thing. Totally. Like,
yeah.
And I went, God, this is good.
Yeah, like, it's good.
So let's talk about best tracks.
Is that where you're landing at the moment?
No, do you know what? My Petroleum, I don't know why. I know it's
I mean,
totally
it's massive Beck energy, isn't it?
Because it's a Beck cover.
Oh, my God. I just love Beck too much.
There's a lot of overlay energy.
Petroleum. Petroleum is 100% in my top.
And you know what that song's about, right?
Absolutely.
His song is about them playing in Margate. He played a gig right in the midst of an 18-month touring, and they basically, it's the one and only time he basically, on the mic, said, I can't, like, I'm not enjoying this. I don't know what I'm doing here, to the crowd. He basically was completely burnt out. He was drinking too much. and the band called him out on it. And basically, you listen, you know, I can't phone it in. There's lyrics about him basically realizing that you can't magic up stage presence. Magic you can't make yourself do it. But he basically had this meltdown pretty much after that gig. He quit drinking pretty much there and then. He said that revitalized them as a band. It's like, so you could get into the genius lyrics because there's so much context to all of these songs.
I did not know about that. Okay, that's interesting. I've just been enjoying it.
Nolan, what about you?
I bounce around. I think the one that I've been liking this week is Grifter's Grief. And I think it's well produced. I think that all of their vocals, I think, work really well on it. It walks that fine line, so it pushes in a little bit more than other tracks, but it's friendly to the ears, but has a lot of layers to it. So
the two tracks that people would pick out as perhaps fillers were Grifter's Grief and Fizzy Fish, and yet I've really come round to them. I mean, Joey. Feels like a good time to
thumbs up on Fizzy Fish.
Which
song could you
follow
it listening to again, Joey?
Look, I like the ones that you don't. I like the fucking miserable ones. Like, as always, I like the absolute miserable face ones. I love Down by the Stream.
Because they picked on me too, so I know, same as you, that the pain never really goes away. It just finds new places to hide inside the darkest nooks and crannies.
Yeah, me too.
It's difficult to say I love it. I really like that.
It really flips, doesn't it? There's this sort of knockabout. We were in the lads, and then there's this just very dark. So,
like I'm here all day to listen to that. Like, I actually really resonate. Like, I believe him. I feel him. I'm on board for all of the messages in that track. The flip at the end, like, which is like the note to his kid, like really, really. Gut punch got me.
It's like, hard to really listen to.
Proper gut punch got me. And like copy and paste all of those notes for Blackpool Illuminations as well. It's a bit trite. It's a bit silly, like the whole fake therapy appointment kind of like structure to it.
I think that's what kind of fucking ruins it.
But I'm kind of like I really like spoken word. So we're doing Spin It or Bin It on spoken word. Turns out, I hadn't really ever thought about it. I like loads of spoken word tracks, and there's loads of tracks by artists who don't do spoken word stuff, who their spoken word stuff I really, really like, and that's some of my favorite music. So again, I'm kind of here all day for that kind of stuff. I thought the Blackpool Illuminations, that the spin at the end there, again, from flipping his childhood to his kids.
Yeah.
That, like I'm here all day for that. Like, I'm really, really interested in hearing more of that.
Yeah, I think there's big chunks of this album that feel like he's talking to his kid in the future, just kind of going, I'm really sorry that I wasn't around as much as I wanted to be because I'm pursuing my dream, but I feel shit about it. But there's a great line, and I think Undertow, which sounds like a pop record, and he's sort of saying, basically, you know, what good is the guilt if you don't do anything with it?
Which is
great.
And do you know what? He does have, at moments, there aren't just... that song is very Pulp-esque. But you know, Jarvis Cocker does that thing of, he has a conversation with you.
Yeah.
And you feel, you know, like you feel him saying, I was in the back of the house and this was happening. And, you know, whatever, that, you know, like, that wasn't a lyric, by the way. But, you know, like, he recounts the moments and you're there.
Kind of like Aesop Rock did as well.
You know, totally, I think, like, you know,
there's
like,
a bit of parallel.
I think there are things about, you know, like... I was thinking about, you know, the Pulp song Babies is one of my favorites, which is him hiding in a cupboard and his older sister's bringing this boy home and you know, he's having to listen to them basically having sex. And it's
another really, really good count, like reference, the Jarvis Cocker reference.
100%.
For another northern funny, like,
walking a tightrope. Do I mean Morrissey, this? Am I being ironic? Like, it's, you know,
before the racist scumbag bit, like, those are the touch points for me for like northern humor in music.
Yeah, just
or even
just
Al, even like pretty, even pretty Al, like bar. Alan Bennett.
Yeah,
even, you know, like, you know, like, you know, so I just
think his second album was shit though.
Yeah. Alan Bennett's second album was terrible.
Well, I mean, I thought his the Arthur Baker remixes were great. So I think I'm a bit like you, Nolan. I flip between a lot of things. I really love Vineyard in the North. It's just another really interesting theme that until you read the lyrics, you don't know. there is a big theme of global warming. That whole song is about basically going, when the weather's screwed to the point where it's warm enough in the north, I'm going to quit the band and become a, you know, become a winemaker. And it's funny, but also he's generally talked about, you know, what the hell do we do? Like, there's a, in Way Make Hits, there's a lines about when the water keeps on rising, and it's actually a really big thing for them. And a lot, I mean, Dream Job is probably going to be one of my favorite songs of the year, but I think When the Laughter Stops is the one I go for, because K2J Pearson I really like. And I think, like you talked about, Nolan, for the general sort of female backing vocals, her addition there does something completely different that they haven't done before. And I really love how a band then develops and becomes open to it.
When the Laughter Stops was one of my first standouts. Like, and I'd probably say it's one of my top tracks of the year as well. It's just everything about that song is just so tight and so well done.
And that lyric about when the laughter stops, we go back to our proper jobs. I want to know my chance is fully blown. That is basically their entire career in one couplet.
On my problematic second listen to the album, I remember approaching that track, and I remember thinking, I really need a break from this guy's voice. And I think it's really interesting sequencing to put that track where it is, because I was running, and I was just thinking, oh my God, like, this is really, the intensity of this is kind of feels like too much for me. I really need a different voice. And then you actually got one.
Yeah.
So I do think there's something very conscious about where that track is on the album as well.
I say one thing as a kind of final thing, which is this is a big step forward as a second album. Their next move is really interesting, right? Really interesting. Like, they're getting all they're taking off in America, and they're getting coverage in Rolling Stone and Pitchfork and all of that stuff. And it'd be interesting, I think, I feel to me like they're savvy enough to maybe, I wonder if there's another move that might be even more interesting. You know what I mean? I think that, you know, that it might be an interesting step.
I hope this album gives them enough success and creative freedom to do
it, feels
almost
like it
just
is,
unshackle them to the point where they do anything they like. I'm going to leave the last line. There's a little fanzine that came with the album, if you, like me, brought a special edition vinyl. Saw me coming. And basically all that, I think this is what it's all about, right? You can't control what people think of music, but James Ritt wrote, "The only truth you need to know is this. We had a great time making this record, and it came from a pure and honest place. That is all." And that's really all you can ask for, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally, totally.
This is not happening.
Welcome to part two, Spin It or Bin It. We each choose a track on a theme and see if the others want to pump it or dump it.
That was a bit aggressive, mate.
Yeah.
Pump it or dump it.
He liked that too much.
So many.
Like Wolf of Wall Street there, wasn't it?
Wow.
Pump it and dump, pump and dump. This time we reference Yard Axe James Smith and nod to our favourite spoken word tracks. Up first, Brother Nolan.
So what do we do for spoken word? For me, it was a non-conversation. The hardest thing was picking more tracks for my playlist that we all did our 16 track playlist that you can find in our link tree and all that jazz, which is a great playlist, by the way. But for me, it was just an automatic, and it was Outkast from their third album, Spodeody Dopalicious.
But the United Parcel Service and the people at the post office didn't call you back because you had cloudy piss. So now you're back in the trap, just that. Trap. Going to marinate on that for a minute.
There are so many elements to why I love this song, but I think that it feeds into kind of the whole image that they had on the cover of the album. And it was such an unexpected song. And it's a song that for a lot of years I think was slept on. It's only kind of really started popping up like everywhere over the last 5-6 years, and you always hear it in cafes and bars now. But the first time I heard it, I fell in love with it straight away. It was like a different element to Outkast. It was kind of like telling a different story. And also, I mean, geez, when the brass hits in on this song, it just makes me so, so happy. So this is my track for spoken word. What do you guys think about it?
Spin it.
Next.
Easy.
Joey,
give us a little bit of context there.
Oh, well, it's just a thing of rare beauty, isn't it? You could listen to any section of this on repeat for the length of the track and be happy.
And it's like 7 minutes or something, right? Like it's a long song.
It's a long song.
I mean, the longest playlist we've probably done, those four tracks. It's eight minutes for yours, David. Seven for yours. Seven for yours, Joey.
26 minutes for four tracks.
Wow, for four tracks. It's weird, isn't it? With spoken word, you kind of like this. Obviously quite a lot to say. Look, I just love this track. Again, I'm going to use the word nostalgia for the second time in this podcast. You know, I'm a massive fan of like a nostalgic look back to something. It just ticks just about every single box for me. It doesn't sound dated. I mean, it kind of does sound dated and then totally doesn't sound dated at the same time. Nolan, what was the year this was released?
I'm going to have to do it off the top. This is off the top of my head. So
98.
Yeah, so it's 98, right when I started university. But yeah, I mean, it's just nodding its hat towards like a different era. And I think that it has those like those elements of like, Superfly to it, right? Like 70s kind of American kind of like that gritty kind of funk. But it's also got relevant things throughout that I probably would agree with you are still relevant to this day. And I think that also it's almost like Andre and Big Boi have two different tracks. Like you always remember like what one of them says or what the other one says, but you rarely remember the two of them together because the track is so spread out, which is really cool as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not massively familiar with this track. It probably won't surprise you to know that Outkast, I was there with the hits, but it kind of passed me by, but you're right. I mean, that brass, I remember I was doing some Googling today and there's a big Reddit thread of like, what was the sample for the trumpet come from? And they're like, no, it was recorded for the track. And that kind of says it all, that kind of the seriousness of making that sound exactly right. And that meant getting it in to be recorded. And I love the fact that like, it's like 1.5 minutes before anyone speaks on the track.
Yeah. 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 You've just got Andre's vocals. Like the whole thing about the track, I imagine it was quite orchestrated, but like it sounds like just a jam session, just throwing some stuff together, see what happens.
Teeny bit of my head going, this doesn't sound very spoken word from the first 90 seconds. Let me check my definition. And then obviously, you know, comes in, but it was great. I mean, Big Boi called it a pimp soliloquy. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Dave, what do you think?
You'll spin it. Yeah, actually, it's interesting this. I'm not that familiar with the album. I have listened to it a fair, you know, sort of, I didn't know it at the time. I think Stankonia was like my introduction to Outkast. Yeah. I came quite late to them, to be honest. I guess, am I judging this by Outkast or by anything? Because I guess, you know, when you don't have a history with a track and I've listened to this record and I've heard that track on it, it's never done anything much for me. It is interesting isolating it and listening to it in its entirety. I do appreciate it's very musically cool and there's a lot going on. It's not doing a lot for me. Like, it's not made me want to like spend more time listening to it. I'm scared here because I don't want to ever bin an Outkast track,
considering binning this track. Are you fucking mad?
Well, I'm just maybe I'm being like the devil's advocate because I think we're all going to like lots of things. I just wonder if, no, I'm probably not going to bin it, but I'm not in love with it. Right, I'm really enjoying listening to it.
Are you going to spin it then? Because if you're not going to spin it,
I mean, fucking hell, just tell us what you're going to do.
Do you know what? I think I'm going to bin it.
Why?
I think I'm going to bin you.
I want to see Nolan's face.
No, like, how can you even consider binning this track, David?
Just because I wanted to see your face when I said the words.
Hey, man, that's fine. That's fine. Your song's coming up soon, so
I know. And I, do you know what? I'm expecting an interesting response to that, and I chose it for that because not everyone can choose LCD Sound System and just get three fucking spins, mate. Anyway, but it's all good.
Well, true. So three spins.
Oh no. You know what I'm saying? I love Outkast.
Like all joking aside, like I don't get how you don't love the song. Like
Can I ask a question, Nolan?
I think this is very David, this song.
Okay.
I'm super surprised because I think it's really David. Nolan, I was gonna ask, has this song got like cooler with age?
Like, yes, 100% it has.
Like when it was recorded, it was
like
a
pastiche,
nostalgic
almost.
Hark back to something. But now it's like a nostalgic hark back to somebody nostalgically harking back to something. And I just think it's got like meta cool.
I think it was massively ahead of its time.
Yeah. Maybe
like it is one of the best things I think they've actually done.
But in my opinion. I think, do you know what it is? I just think it's okay, it's hooks in me, and maybe I haven't had that experience. That's all it is. Yeah.
Just put it on at your summer barbecue. In 1998.
Yeah, sure.
Well, big things are happening on screen
right.
a little bit.
Big things are happening. Right. On to the next.
Yeah, so it's me next. I've picked a very obvious track. I couldn't not pick Gil Scott-Heron and The Revolution Will Not Be Televised for all sorts of reasons. I mean, for one, it's an incredible, incredible record.
The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
We talked earlier about American people listening to English music like The Smiths and like unpicking the history. I remember hearing this. Me and my brother Dave got a mail order CD called Superfunk, but this sounded different to everything. I'd never heard anything like it. I was 19. I learned more about American history, culture, society, black oppression, civil rights in this entire track than I had in my entire life up to that point. And I remember listening to it like obsessively. It's sort of eviscerating the American dream with that kind of all the white waspy signifiers as bait. It's obviously really funky. Gil's voice is amazing. All the history had as a spoken word, artist, a poet, a musician. But that disdain was unbelievable. And it felt revolutionary at the time and still does now. I think the sad thing, I guess, the sad coda to this record is you listen to it and you think, not much has changed, has it? I mean, it's incredible. This is what, a 60-year-old record? An unbelievable piece of music.
It's worth mentioning, like, this sort of what it comes out of, like, jazz poetry and, like, and that whole scene. It is poetry, you know, it is kind of like that.
It's
almost like it had a value of its own. It's become a whole thing. You're right. It's interesting that everything he's talking about hasn't really changed, and it is really, really striking. And again, it's very clever. It's very witty. It's kind of quite funny and bleak at the same time. It's also like, it's a call to arms. It's really, really cool. And when he finally says the revolution will be live.
Yeah.
He's been waiting all that time to tell you that.
Doesn't that sound prescient though? Because I guess it's like he in some way had a window into the future where, no, it won't necessarily be televised, but it will be live because I think that's it's quite an amazing thing that.
I'm not sure the revolution he wanted to happen is the one that's happening.
Well, no,
I'm not
going to.
I'm not sure that the storming the Capitol was exactly the revolution he had in mind, but it is. Right. God, I love this record. That's good. Anyway, yeah. Going to spin it.
I've never been a massive fan of this song.
Wow.
Only because I think it's just too many people refer to it like loosely.
But is that Gil Scott-Heron's fault?
Yeah.
No, it's not his fault at all. That's what I'm saying. I'm still going to spin it. But like,
I totally get what you're saying. There's an overexposure to it, and there's a laziness in it being a signifier for a lot of things.
It's like,
However, you kind of got to strip this away,
and then they put on Bob Marley.
Yeah, of course.
Legend.
Like, it would be weird if David played it as a mythical summer barbecue, because I feel like it's lost all meaning then.
People need to be reminded at my mythical summer barbecue, but the revolution being is going to be televised. I think
revolution will be live in Leeds in around June or July.
the middle class vegan barbecue will be televised.
How dare you?
Bring your New Balance and Carhartt.
I cater to a range of diets. I can't believe you're accusing me of that.
So I played Spin It or Bin It with my kids the other day. On a fairly long car journey, and we got through them all like three times, and this is the track that both of my kids picked out.
Nice.
My daughter loved it. Really, really surprised, and it just made me love it even more. I think
that's lovely, mate. That is lovely.
Given the hip-hop history, Nolan, like, there's guy just said, like, I learned more about American history, black oppression, etc. from this track. Like, there are points in this track that I know about American history, but I know it from hip-hop. Like, I love protest music. I absolutely love really fucking angry protest music. And this is like the angriest protest music delivered in the calmest, most intelligent, constrained, elegant manner you could possibly think of. How does he not ever reach the point of losing his cool while delivering this?
But I think that's part of the art, right?
There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay.
Yeah,
and he repeats it. It's just a cool calm. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. It like sends a chill through my entire
I think he
world.
Like repeats that as well, as if to me that's presumably white people mainly going,
just in case
said,
you missed
what?
It
and then he, yeah exactly be,
yeah
it, yeah
just
it's
in case
so
you
good.
Missed that point, I'm gonna say it really calmly and coolly.
But I mean, it's interesting because he does, if you hear like a track like Whitey on the Moon,
yeah,
like he does
yeah.
absolutely yeah, yeah. go there in a way,
100%.
Like, and you hear the anger there, yeah, yeah. You know, like
it's like a really yeah. conscious yeah. choice for yeah. this track. Yeah. There will be a public service announcement. Coolness.
But he's being the public service announcement, right?
Exactly.
That's the point.
Yeah, yeah.
He's being the guy on the radio.
Exactly. So he holds
at that
it,
point.
Right?
You know,
but it's
radio
just beautiful.
Was where All American Radio had adverts on it, and that's what he's riffing on, right? I mean, it's such a beautiful record. Yeah.
So, and just quick question: Bullwinkle, is that a reference to Rocky and Bullwinkle? Do I have
it
to
must
rewatch?
Be, yeah. It
yeah.
must.
Do
be,
I have
yeah.
to rewatch Rocky and Bullwinkle and reassess?
Not
my,
really. It's
I mean,
pretty. I'm... It's pretty basic stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's around that time, so I imagine it is there.
The revolution will put you in the driver's seat.
Yeah, it's good. So you're bidding it, Nolan, right?
No, I'm spinning.
Oh, okay,
I've just
had enough of it.
I don't
have the revolution.
You know what? I think what it is, to be brutally honest with you, I think it's a really good song. I think I've heard it too many times.
It's what? It's the Bob Marley paradigm that you're saying.
Well, no, that's what
it's
I said.
The Bob
it's
Marley
like
paradigm.
It's like yeah, it's yeah
it's
exactly,
like,
exactly.
It's like it's often a sort of a cheap choice of making a saying something, and that has nothing to do with the artist and just to do with their legacy, right? And
yeah,
that's,
yeah, fair
yeah,
enough.
Totally.
Three spins, I'll take it. Joey, what are you going to follow that with, mate?
The best spoken word track ever recorded. Losing My Edge by LCD Sound System.
I'm losing my edge to the kids from France and from London. But I was there. I was there in 1968. I was there at the first Cannes show in Cologne.
I've been trying to shoehorn this track into a spin it or bin it theme for three and a bit years. And then I can't remember if it was Nolan who suggested spoken word for this month.
Yeah, Bagsy, no returns.
Yeah, it just seemed like I had to jump in 30 seconds after that and Bagsy this track. This is my favorite LCD Sound System track. This is probably the first track that I write in my top 10 favorite tracks ever. I just love every single thing about this track. And I think what I love, I really like music written about music. I love hearing people like sing and rap about music and about different musicians. And this is about like, I just think if anybody's like really aggressively into music like we are, you've probably said one of these things at your time, or you've said something
most weeks
to somebody else sounded exactly like one of the lyrics from this track. It's just brilliant, isn't it? It's just about being in love with music and having been in love with music forever and it being your exact and entire world, but the tides are turning and you're being replaced by somebody who's more prescient and more cool or more now. And you can just pick out like any lyric in this and it's just an absolute joy to listen to. Like sonically, it like really hits really hard as well. Such a simple track. It punches like so way beyond its weight. It's absolutely incredible.
And he was also like undermining himself at the same time, which was the best
yeah.
thing. And I think
it's ripping the shit out of himself,
yeah,
isn't he? Really?
I've never been wrong. I used to work in the record store. I had everything
before anyone.
It's the best line.
I
was there in the Paradise Garage.
Is there a track less likely in the history of this podcast to be binned by anybody than this track? I mean, is there any point responding to this? Like, I mean, it's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. What I love about this track, there's an irony to this track that I didn't know about at the time. So at the time, Joey and I were living together, and like every couple times a week, I come home from work. It was when I was working in media with like all the new releases. Now, Joey had heard Losing My Edge and I hadn't, but I got like an advanced copy of the LCD album, and I put it on the table in a second, like Joey literally like a magpie to something shiny, like saw it in the middle of the stack. He's like, oh my God. And I was like, what? There's a lot of hype. I've not heard it at all. And Joey just started laughing and he was like, let me play a track for you. Right. Almost like, fuck,
oh, so you knew that already. And we're like,
yeah. Fuck you, Nolan, and all your new fucking releases. You don't even know this song.
You don't know what you really want.
Yeah, exactly.
which interestingly is exactly what the song's about.
Exactly.
It could have been like, I'm so ahead of it. I had this album before I even knew I had this album. Like, it was literally like he went for it. Like, and he was laughing at me. And I was like, I don't get what you're talking about here, mate. And then I heard it. I was like, oh.
And the lovely callback as well towards the end of the track where he just lists musicians that he obviously loves. Yeah. Gil Scott-Heron. The only artist that gets shouted out. Gil Scott-Heron.
I also love, like, he was doing this on his, like, debut album, like it's
2005.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
You know, I love he's already tired, you know.
Yeah. So I've already had enough of your shit.
I've already had enough.
I often wonder though, like, you know, when he was like putting it together and he's doing the list, was he doing it out of angst or was he doing it out of humor or was it just like a verbal unloading?
This is the point about this song, and this is why we all know we're gonna spin it, right? Because what is genius about this record? And actually, I'll be honest, Joey, I groaned when you picked it because I was like, oh, fuck you. You're like, it's, you know, the most obvious.
You went
the
for the easiest option.
But obviously, I've been playing all the four songs and listening to them over and over. And it actually has been a total pleasure to rediscover this. And I've gone back and listened to the album as well again because I remind myself, actually, what is so clever about this record is he is simultaneously, and it's so rare to do this, undercutting himself while being the cutting edge. He knows he's on it. He already knows it's over before it, he's doing it. He's making reference to that, which makes it more cutting edge because he is undercutting it. Like, it's the meta of like post.
It's like the Escher steps of like.
But all of that wouldn't matter if the song itself was not so fucking good. Yeah. And the groove and the beat and the build and all of that stuff. Yeah. It is a masterclass in understanding where you live in the culture at that moment. He also had to project this forward. Yeah. You know, you talk about Yard Act and talk about We May Hit some of that stuff. It's the same, you know, but this is a masterclass in going, I think I might be here right now and I'm going to try and manifest that. And I'm also going to undercut myself because I'm already anxious about it.
And of course, LCD Sound System recorded a track called You Wanted a Hit, which is like exactly the same song as the Yard Act.
Yeah. I mean, he was 35 when he made this record, so I would argue that he could have only made it because he was 35. No one could have made this when they were 21 because they don't have the 20 years of music that he'd already have had.
So, I mean, this is 19 years old now.
Yeah.
Whoa. Anyway, spinning.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone else? I can't really add much to what you said, David. I mean, it's great on many levels. It's also great because it is essentially, like you say, it's the cornerstone of what got this podcast and all of us together. And it's sort of about us in a sort of way. Because you can laugh at yourself, can't you?
Of course you can.
You know, it's what we do the best. We're English, right?
But remember, I was the first guy playing Daft Punk to the Rock Kids.
You were. And I'm also not English. Just
I wasn't at that gig because I was selling my turntables to buy guitars.
Were you? Okay.
Yeah.
I've run out of options now. What the
after
hell?
After a lot of consideration, I'm going to spin it.
Fair enough. To be fair, Daft Punk are playing at my house right now, so it's all good.
Finishing up, David.
I thought a lot about this, and I had a number of things on the shortlist, and I hesitated at this choice because I have no idea what anyone's going to make of this track. But genuinely, I think this is maybe my favorite spoken word track of all time. And that is Oh Superman by Laurie Anderson.
Oh Superman. Oh John.
I remember this song as a kid. I think I might have seen it on Top of the Pops or the radio or something. You know, when you're too young to understand something and like it's weird, but you're interested in it and you don't know what the hell it is. I'd never heard someone talking on a record like that. And she sounded like a robot from space. it sounded quite warm as well and sort of organic and stuff. And anyone who doesn't know, Laurie Anderson is an artist, like a performance artist from New York. This is pretty much her only hit record. Like, I mean, she is an experimental musician. I mean, properly performance artist. Like, she's invented various musical instruments, I think, like the talking stick and the tape bow violin. And
sounds like something off Nathan Barley, doesn't it?
No, I know, but you know, it's such an unusual song to be a big hit. I think that's always interesting. And I think it was one of those weird, crazy, rare moments where like the proper avant-garde New York art scene hit the pop charts. Like, for me, that is automatically really interesting. If you listen to the whole 8 minutes 25, and I've no idea what people make of that, but when I was listening to it, I found it really moving and really think it's a phenomenal piece of work. I you might all absolutely hate it, I have no idea, but I just really find it affecting, and I feel like it's an artist making a pop record, or not even making a pop record, making an art record that became a pop single. The curiosity of that for me is why I chose this.
I think this record is so ahead of its time. It blew me away when I saw when it was made. There's been so many re-edits and re-rubs of the song, and you know, I've played it in sets, like various different iterations of it. Maybe because it's easy to edit as well, and you can have fun with it.
But
stuff.
It feels robotic. It feels like you can make stuff.
Yeah. And it's so ahead of its time. It's a bit of a kind of out of the blue pick, to be honest with you. I never have thought of it as spoken word. Like, I get why you picked it, but it's like not what you'd traditionally think of spoken word, but I think that's kind of the beauty of it, because
line,
it's like
it?
yeah
it but it's the line, but you definitely there's plenty of speaking on
yeah 100%. Like, it's ahead of its time. Like, it's a great record, so I'm spinning.
I'd forgotten how long this song was. I was like, oh, I'll just put the playlist on. Bloody hell. I was like
but do you think it builds to something little sort of beautiful little crescendo? Like,
it does.
A little...
it's a mad record now. It's insane that it got into the charts. It's insane that...
By the way, this got to number 2 in the charts in 1982. I mean,
it's mad.
Wow. Number 2.
That's impressive.
I'd love to know what was number 1.
That's kind of bizarre. That's so bizarre.
It's going to be like Spandau Ballet.
It's probably like, you know, what, you know, Shut Up or Your Face by Joe Dalton.
Rennie and Renato, Save Your Love.
Exactly. Men at Work, you know.
But yeah, like, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of this record. It definitely does something like nothing else does, and it's one of those tracks that I'm really happy that it exists. You know, I'm not sure I could play it at a barbecue. I mean, I'm not sure anyone would play at a barbecue except Pax David, but I'd spin it because it's great that it exists in and it had the success that it had.
This track makes me want to listen to the Yard Act.
Okay. I was looking at you thinking Joey's on a run up.
Yeah, I did think Joey's being very quiet.
I can feel
on
him.
This.
He does a little thing when he moves back and he like shifts left and right, like he's about to make a rugby tackle, and he's like,
I on paper, I kind of think like I should like this. My son Sammy said to me in the car, he said, how long's this? I said, it's 8.5 minutes. And he's like, it sounds like somebody trying not to sneeze for 8.5 minutes. so then I'm listening to it, and then I'm thinking, for the man who like violently opposes auto-tune, this is a very, very strange
auto-tune.
Of
course it fucking is.
This is before auto-tune was invented.
Are you joking?
I was when auto-tune was invented.
No,
1981.
No. Like, voice boxes were a thing in the 70s.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's not the same thing.
Listeners, if you could see this now, it's the sound of a nerve being plucked.
Honestly.
Right. Okay. So let me just say one other thing. I don't really think it's spoken word either.
Oh, for God's sake.
There are words spoken in it. I don't think it's spoken word. However, right.
They are speaking and there are some words.
So then what I find really, really strange with this one, though, is when I haven't heard it for a bit, in my mind, I play it in my mind and I really like it. I'm like, do you know what? I need to go back and listen to that. Then I'm like, nope. I was
Can I say, Joey, You are on a roll this pod. No, I know. Your responses have just been off the scale, mate.
But I did a thing yesterday, like really late in my journey with this, because we've been listening to the shortlist for like 3 weeks or something now.
Yeah.
I decided, I wonder what else she's done. And I really, really, really like everything else I've heard from her. She really reminds me of Jenny Hival.
Jenny Hival reminds you of her, you mean?
It feels like I should like it because it's so so obviously a lot of people I listen to obviously reference her and she has influenced them massively.
Yeah.
I can't get on board with this track, I'm afraid.
I think that was such a great response. You deserve to be in this.
Yeah.
I had two options for how I was going to introduce my thoughts on that. One was, this track makes me want to listen to Yard Act. The second one was, you know those tracks where, like, sonically, they're so amazing and you just want them to be twice the length that they are? This isn't one of them. So I went for the Yard Act.
Like, say, this is the one where it makes me want to be a tenth of the length it is. Yeah. Do we even need to bother with what it is? It's obviously losing my edge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Otherwise, we might as well dismantle the entire podcast.
Oh, well, what's the point of even being here? Seriously. This is happening.
So that means also, so Joey's basically 4 for 4.
Yeah, but some of us are bringing...
Let's start a no Joey WhatsApp group to take him down for next month.
I mean, I don't choose 8.5 minute.
I think it's because he's losing his edge and he's just bringing the crowd pleasers. I'm just going to put that out there.
I mean, I would say he is taking the easy route.
You know, thank you.
Comes with interesting songs. I mean, fuck, sure. If we wanted to do predictable, we'd call this podcast, This Is Predictable Music.
This is happening exactly as you thought it would.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. This is as expected.
Oh.
Haters gonna hate.
I will continue to bring Lowe Anderson to the table. That's all I'm gonna say.
That is episode 44, done and dusted. Thanks for listening, everyone, wherever you are. We'll be back in May with Vampires Weekend new album, Only God Was Above Us, and that is Nolan's. If you like what you hear, give us a review or subscribe wherever you get your pods. We'd love to get your input and hear what you think. Find us on the socials too. We're always up for a chat. But until episode 45, you've been listening to This Is Not Happening.
Vampires Weekend.
Vampires Weekend.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
All right. I'll just re-record that line.
No, it's fine. We'll just leave that. We'll leave that in.
It's like a lot of vampires are together having a weekend.
Yeah. Oh, God.